It's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Roger Whittle, Managing Editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, thanks for coming on the program.
Nice to be here, Carl.
Also with us on the line is veteran journalist Kevin Wooster, Rapid City reporter for KLO-TV. And Kevin, thanks for joining us as well.
Great to be back, Carl.
Well, South Dakota's congressional delegation is divided on yesterday's release of the Senate Intelligence Committee's report on CIA's interrogation practices. Republican Senator John Thune said the conclusions are misleading and don't represent all the facts. Republican Congresswoman Kristi Noem said the details of the report could allow U.S. enemies to twist our intentions. But retiring Democratic Senator Tim Johnson said releasing the report was the right thing to do because American people deserve to know the truth, and he said we are a stronger nation as when we admit our mistakes, learn from the past, and move forward. The partisan divide in South Dakota reflects the Democrat-Republican split in Congress regarding this report. And Roger Whittle, has this issue over interrogation and torture always been a partisan issue?
Well, it certainly has lately. Intelligence Committee couldn't even come together to write a report. The report was actually written just by the Democrats on the committee, and then the Republicans wrote their own 100-page rebuttal to that report. But it's like anything else in Washington these days. It's a political issue. They seem to use anything they can to speak ill of the opposite party in hopes of winning elections.
Kevin, the partisan split, do you think that hurts the debate and the discussion over this issue of interrogation and torture?
I think it does. I think it hurts the debate and discussion over many important issues. And, you know, when you start picking sides based on politics, and let's face it, if the report came from a Republican Senate committee, my guess is the response for Tim Johnson and John Thune would be the exact opposite. I mean, you hate to oversimplify these things, and there are some variations depending on the issues, but this often breaks down this way, and it, in a lot of ways, it's a sad commentary about the state of the process in Washington. And one side likes to blame the other on that, when in fact both. This is a perfect example of both contributing to it.
Can this issue be discussed without a background of partisan politics, Roger, or is the environment in Washington such that can't be done right now?
I would say it cannot be done. When's the last time there's been any issue that's been discussed in Washington that hasn't been turned into a partisan issue? And Kevin's right. It's a sad commentary on what's going on in Washington.
Kevin, is this an important discussion to have?
Huge discussion, I think. There's nobody with more credibility on this issue in my mind than John McCain, having been a prisoner of war, having been tortured himself. And, you know, his common and I think telling comment is always, it's about us, not them. And he is, you know, rejects the notion that torture produces valuable information. I don't know if that's true, and obviously he has a wounded spirit that he comes from when he speaks, because, you know, the CIA officials reject this report written by the Democrat majority in the Senate committee, and say that there was information that was valuable. In fact, information that helped lead to the arrest of Osama bin Laden, other Al-Qaeda leaders, and avert attacks. The report says not a single attack was averted by these enhanced interrogation or torture.
Roger, what do you think happens with this report now? Anything?
I don't think so. Like anything else, eventually something new will come up to get everybody's attention, and this will be forgotten.
Well, moving on from that, also yesterday on the Senate floor, Majority Leader Harry Reid honored Senator Tim Johnson's fighting spirit. Reid said that Johnson is leaving the Senate as he entered it undefeated. Johnson is retiring when his term ends next month. What do you think Tim Johnson's legacy is?
Well, grit to begin with. I mean, he's as tough and gritty as it comes in politics, and that is in both in the way he campaigns, because he's not afraid to swing it hard in a campaign, and he's proven that. And as Harry Reid said, his undefeated record, you know, he retires not having lost an election at the state level or the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate, and beaten in that Larry Pressler and John Thune, which is not easy to do. We always used to laugh that we thought Tim would rather be 175 pages deep in the budget book than he would be out on the campaign trail or speaking to us as reporters at a press conference, because he loves the blue-collar work of the Senate and when he was in the House. And he'll also be remembered as a guy that never ran from earmarks. You know, he developed a great position on the Senate Appropriations Committee, where he was very important in funding projects in South Dakota that included military projects that are especially important, West River, you know, water projects. And he never apologized for that. A lot of people ran from the earmarks, and he always felt that they were good things for a state like South Dakota. You know, he's certainly going to be remembered as one of the most successful politicians and political leaders we've ever had.
How was it that he was able to be elected and continually reelected in a state dominated by Republicans?
Well, he had a sense for who we are and what was important to us. He still has that sense, obviously. He's going to take it into retirement. But and, you know, good constituent service by his staff, by him, when he was still able to get out and about. He was, you know, like we expect our congressional representatives and the U.S. senators to be, is part of us and come back and show up at important times and speak for us out there. And, you know, it's popular nowadays to think you cannot maintain a South Dakota sense and live in D.C., and I think Tim Johnson proved that wrong, as many of our members of Congress did before that. He didn't have to do the fly back and forth game every Friday and Monday that, bless their hearts, Senator Thune does, Congressman Noam does, and I believe Senator-elect Rounds plans to do. Tim Johnson stayed out there, believed it was important to maintain connections, to have a relationship with people there, and he was never ashamed to say that I live out here right now where I work, but my heart is always in South Dakota, and I'll be coming back there.
Kevin, how long do you think it'll be before South Dakota's send another Democrat to Congress?
Well, I asked that at a group meeting, a breakfast meeting of old gray hairs like me once, and one of them said that person hasn't been born yet. I'd like to think that's a little pessimistic, and that was a Democrat speaking. But I don't know. I mean, you look at Stephanie Hirsch-Sandlin and think, will she come back in? Because she's formidable if she does. You look at Mayor Mike Hewitt down at Sioux Falls. Is he a possibility? Brendan Johnson obviously is a very real possibility. But when might that happen and how? I'm as puzzled as the guy at the breakfast table at this point.
Roger Whittle, are you as puzzled too?
Well, I have faith that it will happen sometime in our lifetime, Kevin. South Dakotans have been willing all through the years to elect Democrats to statewide offices, George McGovern, Stephanie Herseth. Yeah, there's somebody out there, and sometime they'll surprise us and win an election.
Well, I hope so. All red is as bad as all blue.
Well, speaking of the Democrats, the state Democrats select a new party chair this weekend. Former U.S. Senate candidate Rick Wyland says he won't run for the position. There had been some talk that he would be a candidate. The two announced candidates are Minnehaha County Commissioner Jeff Barth and Union County Democratic Party Chair Ann Tornberg. Kevin, do you think either can help help the Democrats in South Dakota?
Well, Lord hope so. I was intrigued by the possibility of Rick Wyland becoming the chair, because he comes off a campaign that he really presented himself well, made a lot of national connections with donors, and got to be fairly well known across the state. And obviously he decided that wasn't right for him, and maybe that's not right. Maybe you need a new face or a relatively new face. Obviously Jeff Barth has run a statewide campaign and did it in sort of a creative way, and I really don't know so much about Ann Tornberg, but there's going to have to be some magic there to turn things around, because that party's in a mess.
Kevin Whittle, or excuse me, there I go again. Roger, do you see that one of those might have the magic to make something happen?
Well, you know, I can think of no more difficult job in the state to have than chairman of the state Democratic Party. They certainly are starting at the bottom, and the old saying, there's no place to go but up. Maybe that will be their mantra, and something will happen. I'm actually surprised there's two qualified candidates who are interested in the job, which is a good sign.
Well, moving on, according to a study published this week in the Washington Post, South Dakota is one of the least corrupt states in the nation. Other reports this year have named South Dakota one of the most corrupt states. This latest study in the Post was based on a survey of state reporters. Were either of you surveyed for this report?
This is one survey that you should definitely take with a grain of salt. Apparently, only 280 reporters nationwide responded to the survey. I think 1,000 were sent out. And according to the story, there were 8 states that had very little, minimal response to the survey. And South Dakota was, of course, one of those. And of the 8 states that they listed as minimal response from, 4 of those are listed as not the four of the most non-corrupt states. So I'm not sure what they were basing their decisions on, but I was not sent a survey, and nobody on my staff was. How about you, Kevin? Did you get one?
I don't know. I get sent so many stuff, so many things. People are always asking to fill something out or do something, so it's possible I did. I don't recall it. Maybe I did and forgot about it, but. I think typically today, if you see a report that says there was a poll done of reporters in South Dakota, it meant somebody called from D.C. and talked to David Montgomery.
Maybe Bob Mercer too.
I wish they'd call Mercer more than they do. no offense to David, but sometimes we don't. The big boys from out east don't get around the state very much when they check. And if they had contacted me, I wouldn't have talked about a great deal of corruption in the state. I think there's certainly a scattered low-level corruption, but it's not very often. And in fact, in my lifetime, once that we came up with an EB-5 with that degree of apparent corruption. And we still don't exactly know how far that goes. I don't know what other states are like. I don't pretend to, but in my experience here, I don't think we're very corrupt.
How easy is it to even find objective data that can accurately measure corruption in state government, Roger?
Well, it's difficult. I know the survey, the other one that had us as one of the most corrupt, actually used federal court cases as a system to base that on. And that, is another problem, because you could have one major issue somewhere or 20 really minor things, and the one that has 20 is going to be more prominent on the survey. So, just the fact that South Dakota can be one of the least corrupt states and one of the most corrupt states in the same year tells you that these surveys are probably not to be paid much attention to.
Kevin, there's a lot of surveys out there, even beyond this corrupt, most corrupt, least corrupt. How should we go about even interpreting these various studies? Should we at least give them a glance and just try to figure out what sort of data they're using and whether we should pay attention to them or not, or just like Roger said about this one, just take it with a grain of salt?
I've always decided kind of how much attention to pay to and how much weight to give them by how badly I need a story for them. And I don't know. I think it's interesting to talk about. I think sometimes they raise interesting issues, and certainly whether or not some report from somebody way off somewhere else tells us that we're corrupt or not, I think we have to keep looking at ourselves all the time and making sure that we're doing things as well as we can and as honestly as we can.
Well, you mentioned the EB-5 affair, Kevin, and last week the State Government Audit and Operations Committee released its report on EB-5, saying essentially that former state official Richard Benda, who committed suicide last year, was solely responsible for the missing money. Roger, does that look like that's it for the EB-5 scandal, or will there be more discussion in the months ahead?
Well, there's still a federal investigation that we haven't heard anything about. So when that is completed, if it ever is, I think we will hear about that. But I think South Dakotans have pretty much show that they are not real interested in this scandal. So I can see after the federal results, if they reflect what the state had, that this will just drift away into oblivion.
Kevin, what are your thoughts?
Well, as Roger says, the federal investigation is still out there, and it'll be interesting to see what that produces. I think there's going to be, obviously, there's some legislation pending. I think we need to tighten up some of the loose ends from an ethical standpoint and a professional practices standpoint that came to light during this process. And I hope the discussion continues. I think it's a worthwhile discussion to have. And I've missed something, Roger or Carl, but have we ever figured out what Joe Boland did with the documents that left the office at Northern State University when he left the office?
I have not heard that, and he appears to be Mr. Teflon, that nothing is sticking to him, so who knows?
I think there are a few questions left. I think that's one that needs to be answered. Somebody, regardless of political affiliation, has to continue to push this until we find out a few of those things.
Well, finally, we're coming to the end of the year, 2014, an election year. Roger, any final thoughts on this year as far as the politics went?
Well, it was an interesting year. We mentioned the Rick Weiland's campaign for Senate. This was a pretty good Senate campaign, he fell considerably short after making it seem like it was going to be close for a while, but I think that was the high point of the year, because everybody assumed that Mike Rollins was just going to walk into the Senate, and he had a little bit of fight on his hand, and Larry Pressler was in there to make things even more interesting. So that's what I'm taking away from the year, is that it was a good Senate race that I think everybody enjoyed.
And Kevin Wooster, for you, certain highlights on the political scene in South Dakota this past year?
Well, obviously, EB-5, that was a slap in the face, and don't underestimate Mike Rounds, which I continue to do, and he continues to prove me wrong since way back when he first ran for governor. Pressler finished a career, I think, on a positive and productive note, Larry Pressler. And Rick Weiland, three losses. You might look at a guy as a loser, but to me, he didn't show as a loser at all in this campaign. He raised important issues. He gave energy and commitment to it, and I think that was an honorable way to end what I assume was his last statewide race.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Kevin, thanks for your time today.
You bet.
And Roger, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to you and Kevin.
Thank you so
you
much.
Too, guys.
Merry Christmas to you guys.